Shemot 25:26. Adonai said to Moshe, "Tell the people of Israel to take up a collection for me. Accept a contribution from anyone who wholeheartedly wants to give. The contribution you are to take from them is to consist of gold, silver and bronze, blue, purple and scarlet yarn, fine linen, goat's hair, tanned ram skins and fine leather, acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, onyx stones and other stones to be set for the ritual vest and breastplate. They are to make me a sanctuary so that I may live among them. You are to make it according to everything I show you, the design of the tabernacle and the design of its furnishings. This is how you are to make it. They are to make an ark of acacia wood, 3¾ feet long, 2¼ feet wide, and 2¼ feet high. You are to overlay it with pure gold. Overlay it both inside and outside, and put a molding of gold around the top of it. Cast 4 gold rings for it, and attach them to its 4 feet, 2 rings on each side. Make poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with gold. Put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark. You will use them to carry the ark. The poles are to remain in the rings of the ark. They are not to be removed from it. Into the ark you are to put the testimony which I am about to give you. You are to make a cover for the ark out of pure gold. It is to be 3¾ feet long and 2¼ feet wide. You are to make 2 cherubim of gold. Make them of hammered work for the 2 ends of the ark cover. Make 1 cherub for 1 end and 1 cherub for the other end. Make the cherubim of 1 piece with the ark cover at its 2 ends. The cherubim will have their wings spread out above so that their wings cover the ark, and their faces are toward each other and toward the ark cover. You are to put the ark cover on top of the ark. Inside the ark you will put the testimony that I am about to give you. There I will meet with you. I will speak with you from above the ark cover, from between the 2 cherubim, which are on the ark for the testimony, about all the orders I am giving you for the people of Israel. You are to make a table of acacia wood 3 feet long, 18 inches wide, and 18 inches high. Overlay it with pure gold, and put a molding of gold around the top of it. Make around it a rim a handbreadth wide, and put a molding of gold around the rim. Make 4 gold rings for it, and attach the rings to the 4 corners near its 4 legs. The rings to hold the poles used to carry the table are to be placed close to the rim. Make the poles of acacia wood, overlay them with gold, and use them to carry the table. Make its dishes, pans, bowls, and pitchers of pure gold. On the table you are to place the bread of the presence, in my presence always. You are to make a menorah of pure gold. It is to be made of hammered work, its base, shaft, cups, ring of outer leaves, and petals are to be of 1 piece with it. It is to have 6 branches extending from its sides, 3 branches of the menorah on one side of it, and 3 on the other. On 1 branch are to be 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms, each with a ring of outer leaves and petals. Likewise, on the opposite branch, 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms, each with a ring of outer leaves and petals. And similarly, for all 6 branches extending from the menorah. On the central shaft of the menorah are to be 4 cups shaped like almond blossoms, each with its ring of outer leaves and petals. where each pair of branches joins the central shaft is to be a ring of outer leaves of one piece with the pair of branches, thus for all six branches. The rings of outer leaves and their branches are to be of one piece with the shaft. Thus the whole menorah is to be a single piece of hammered work made of pure gold. Make seven lamps for the menorah and mount them so as to give light to the space in front of it. Its tongs and trays are to be of pure gold. The menorah and its utensils are to be made of 66 pounds of pure gold. See that you make them according to the design being shown you on the mountain. Chapter 26. You are to make the tabernacle with 10 sheets of finely woven linen and with blue, purple, and scarlet yarn. You are to make them with cherubim worked in, that they have been crafted by a skilled artisan. Each one is to be 42 feet long and 6 feet wide, and all the sheets are to be the same size. 5 sheets are to be joined one to another, and the 5 other sheets are to be joined one to another. Make loops of blue on the edge of the outermost sheet in the first set, and do the same on the edge of the outermost sheet in the second set. Make 50 loops on the one sheet, and make 50 loops on the edge of the sheet in the second set. The loops are to be opposite one another. Make 50 fasteners of gold, and couple the sheets to each other with the fasteners, so that the tabernacle forms a single unit. You are to make sheets of goat's hair to be used as a tent covering the tabernacle. Make 11 sheets. Each sheet is to be 45 feet long and 6 feet wide. All 11 sheets are to be the same size. Join 5 sheets together and 6 sheets together, and fold the 6th sheet double at the front of the tent. Make 50 loops on the edge of the outermost sheet in the first set, and 50 loops on the edge of the outermost sheet in the second set. Make 50 fasteners of bronze. Put the fasteners in the loops and join the tent together so that it forms a single unit. As for the overhanging part that remains of the sheets forming the tent, the half sheet remaining is to hang over the back of the tabernacle, and the 18 inches on the one side and the 18 inches on the other side of that remaining in the length of the sheets forming the tent is to hang over the tabernacle to cover it on each side. You are to make a covering for the tent of tanned ram skins and an outer covering of fine leather. Make the upright planks for the tabernacle out of acacia wood. Each plank is to be 15 feet long and 2.25 feet wide. There are to be 2 projections on each plank, and the planks are to be joined one to another. That is how you are to make all the planks for the tabernacle. Make the planks for the tabernacle as follows. 20 planks for the south side facing southward. Make 40 silver sockets under the 20 planks, 2 sockets under one plank for its 2 projections, and 2 sockets under another plank for its 2 projections. For the second side of the tabernacle, to the north, make 20 planks. And there are 40 silver sockets, 2 sockets under one plank, and 2 under another. For the rear part of the tabernacle, toward the west, make 6 planks. For the corners of the tabernacle in the rear, make 2 planks. These are to be double from the bottom all the way to the top, but joined at a single ring. Do the same with both of them. They are to form the 2 corners. Thus there will be 8 planks with their silver sockets, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one plank, and 2 under another. Make crossbars of acacia wood, 5 for the planks of the one side of the tabernacle, 5 crossbars for the planks of the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 crossbars for the planks at the side of the tabernacle at the rear toward the west. The middle crossbar halfway up the planks is to extend from one end from end to end. Overlay the planks with gold. Make gold rings for them through which the crossbars will pass, and overlay the crossbars with gold. You are to erect the tabernacle according to the design you have been shown on the mountain. You are to make a curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and finely woven linen. Make it with cherubim worked in that have been crafted by a skilled artisan. Hang it with gold hooks on four acacia wood posts, overlaid with gold and standing in four silver sockets. Hang the curtain below the fasteners. Then bring the ark for the testimony inside the curtain. The curtain will be the divider for you between the holy place and the especially holy place. You are to put the ark cover on the ark for the testimony in the especially holy place. You are to put the table outside the curtain and the menorah opposite the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south. Put the table on the north side. For the entrance to the tent, make a screen of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and finely woven linen. It should be in colors, the work of a weaver. For the screen, make five posts of acacia wood. Overlay them with gold and cast for them five sockets of bronze.
Now, of course, he has a different translation than 99% of you. So you're lost in what he's talking about most of the time, right? I do have that outline, and there's a funny thing about that particular translation. If they don't like a word, they ignore it and put another word there. It's quite fascinating with them. I'm not saying it's criticalism, but I find it funny. But there's some words in here that I'd like for you to look at. But first of all, what do you think you just read? What do you think about what you just read? Or what was read?
It's very detailed, very specific, and we don't even have the menorah to this specification.
I would hope that someday Daniel, when he gets well again, grant him that we may be able to put pressure on him, twist his arm, whatever it is, for him to describe again the menorah. He did an extremely good job. And I think it, none of you would like to be able to have it visually being seen again. But, you know, he's only my son. Could I force him? No. Dave.
The word that came to me was patterned, very patterned.
Very patterned,
and
yeah.
God seems to be into systems, too. I love systems.
Nellie.
The colors over and over, blue and purple and red and white. Blue, purple, red and white.
Yeah.
God was very specific about what he wanted for him to dwell within their midst. He wanted to dwell in their midst, and he gave them the description and said, this is what I want you to make for my house. And it sounds like a very beautiful, elegant house. Lots of gold and lots of really fine materials that he wanted so that he could dwell with them.
Do you have some...
No, I just wanted to say, and the colors, the blue or the violet and the red and the white, I was quite surprised that when you... looked at them. You know, Ellie, they've got them at the Temple Institute, all those weavings, those colors. It is actually nothing very definitive. They kind of all blend together so that they look like to be one color almost. I mean, if you look closely, you can see the threads in. I was expecting them to be more delineated, but they're not. They become one.
What you had seen.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Rose.
I think what I find amazing is that the artisans that had to be among the people in order to pull this off, there had to be some highly talented, qualified people.
We will definitely cover that. I named a man in previous chapters because what he did, his son was given that talent.
He only wanted free will offerings too, just what the people wanted.
Correct.
To give.
It had to be three specific items.
Right. He had specific items, but it was a free will offering as opposed to have the people give it as a demand.
Okay. I have an art background, and I noticed that there were two primary colors in purple, which is those two primary colors mixed, but there was no yellow mentioned. And not that God has anything against the color yellow. I think about, you know, people, and there is a certain group of people he has something against, and it may be something to think about that he does not include a certain group of people in his, you know, to dwell
with. Not, that's interesting, but we'll talk about this in a minute. Any more questions? I find this very fascinating. Although it's a lot of technical stuff, all right, and sometimes we don't get a good picture, okay? So I got a show and tell thing here. It's a yo-yo. We call it a yo-yo at work because it's, that's what it's called, a yo-yo. A reverse yo-yo. That's what a, what's the Hebrew word for it? What's the Hebrew word for it? A what? I thought that's English.
Amar.
What was it?
Amar.
Yeah, Amar.
Amar.
Amar. All that means is a certain measurement. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this, because I think it's kind of like an interesting thing. That's ASIC is 18 inches for us. That's all it is, 18 inches. I'm going to stick with that for everybody has a debate whether it's 1 foot, 2 feet, 18 feet. I don't want to care about it. I don't want to care about 18 inches right now. It's a measurement, basically, of a certain man, and that's the reason why it came through. But I'm not going to go through that to tell you what that means. It goes back, date back to Noah. But now, as we talk about this thing, I try to figure out how I can make this kind of interesting. All right, first thing I want to go through, does anybody ever seen anything made out of goat's hair? Ellie? Where did you see it, my dear?
In the desert.
In the desert in Israel. We'll talk about that. It's a very fascinating thing to have seen. And it explains why. The guy explained why. Yes.
They do make things out of mohair that you can buy here, but is this goat hair real coarse?
This particular, yeah. It's not, it's different kind of goat hair, but a different kind of goats, you know. By the way, does anybody know the difference between a ram and a goat? Ram and a goat? I want to make sure we understood. Some dumb people think of a goat as up there, the billy goat and the mountain goat as a ram. And it's, yeah, I just want to make sure that that was understood there. All right, we go now. And in your book, it says Exodus, verse 5, 25th chapter. It says, ram's skin dyed red. And some of your English translation has badger skin. Well, it's an unknown word, but it really is a word that really does exist in Hebrew. And when I went to the Jewish Complete Bible, I guess it's called, they ignored it completely. They just said, fine. Well, it is a word that means something. It has a definite meaning. What has, we do not know. One thing we do have a picture of, right? A lot of people think it's badger. Other ones think it's dolphin. And others think it may be sheep. Well, we already have a ram skin, right? All right. Now, there's another possible explanation is that it could have been, doesn't say that, could have been of the antelope. I have a question, though. How many wild animals did the Israelites have in their camp? None. None whatsoever. So, in a sense, I have to kind of say the Jewish publication probably has, I mean, the Jewish Christian Bible, whatever it's called, may have a better meaning that you take that ram skin and you refine it to a very fine material or very fine, thin, or high-quality leather. So I think he may have that clarification right in that particular translation. I found that very fascinating because we don't have a complete meaning of the word other than it just means clean animal, some from a clean animal. And we have to figure out now, how many dolphins are there that are clean? How many dolphins are there in the desert out there? No, okay. Oh, God must have just had one big leap one. I mean, follow them, just leap as far as they can. Well, no, he didn't. So it's kind of interesting of how he turned that around. I thought, well, that makes sense because now we're talking ram skin. Now he's talking about taking that same thing, which can refer to sheep in a lot of ways, but especially fine sheep. So it's kind of like two layers on something, two different kinds. That's just an input of my thinking. May not be worth much. Verse 7, what is an ephod? It's the outer garment. Okay? Went over their shoulders and covered them. Interesting. Now, when we look at David had an ephod as well. His ephod was made of linen. But there are other in the book of Judges that talk about the ephod several times, but not the ephod you're thinking of. It's an ephod that came an idol, that came an image, and people began to build an ephod for the purpose of worshiping it and honoring it. So it kind of have a horrible translation in the book of Judges. It's one of the downfalls of Gideon when he made an ephod out of gold and placed it up for people to look up to and respect. I do not know the answer. I do not know why. It's unimportant. But here we're talking about a specific ephod, though. And we all know that has to do with the high priest. And so it was a garment that was... Now, what was special about this garment? A lot of onyx stones and other stones were set upon the ephod and on the breastplate. We kind of know what that means. So on the ephod, the outer garment, wasn't like we think of like quote, big tallit. No, it really was a gorgeous outfit. And it had very wonderful, beautiful looking stones embedded within that particular material, more than likely linen. More than likely, they didn't have cotton out there in those days. No cotton fields of Alabama weren't there. It's a priestly garment, shoulder drape. It's like my wife has a drape that she, what do you call a thing that wraps around you and when you're on a cold day? It's the one piece of cloth that wraps all around. A shawl, right. Something of that nature. But this one here, of course, is made of very fine things, very costly, woven, with different colors. Later on, the Bible tells you later on that it's woven in gold and blue and purple and scarlet colors, and it provided the shoulder piece for the breast place to be connected to. So when you had to put the breastplate on, the garment came on, the breastplate had something to hang on to. It was connected basically to that outer garment called the ephod. Now, I want to go to verse 8. Very interesting word there. I'm going to read it here in English, King James. And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. Oh, what is a sanctuary? I'm sorry, the churches of this world do not have a sanctuary. That's not the kind of sanctuary that God lives in. This is not a sanctuary, by the way. This is a grange. The sanctuary always refers to the place where God is going to live. Not a place where people gather, but where God is going to live. And this specific place is the Holy of Holies. That is the sanctuary. All the other ones are the outer portions of, quote, surrounds the sanctuary of where God dwells. So we have to kind of get our picture in mind when we use the word sanctuary in our modern English language. It's not a place for the priest to go and pray to you and speak before you, and you're before the priest, and you're up there, and he's giving you holy water or whatever he gives you. That's not a sanctuary. God doesn't live there. That's not his holy of holy place. That's not where he's at. All right? Now, in New Testament times, where is God dwelling? So that means what? We are the same. Oh. You know what's required in the sanctuary? Cleanliness. Purity. Holiness. With such perfection that you know that's where God is at. Right? Pretty powerful statement, right? New Testament. That's pretty strong. It comes, of course, from the word to wash or to be clean. Comes from a very famous Hebrew word, kadosh. Kadosh means a verb to clean. Kadosh means clean. Now, there's a difference between one's a noun, one's a verb. Okay. Kadosh is the verb. Kadosh is the noun. It's like I've talked to you before. Yah. We say Yahshua means present tense saving. Yeshua means salvation. It's the noun. One's a noun, one's a verb. And so when Jesus is called he should not be called the Yeshua. He should be called the Yahshua. He is the one that's doing the saving. And once we have it, then we have Yeshua. We have salvation. There's a difference between those words. Okay, now. Of course, he wants this tabernacle to be furnished exactly as you saw it, as ye have made it. In verse 10, and he says, and they shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2.5 shall they make its length, and a cubic and a half they shall make its width. How long is a cubic? Okay. How long are 2 cubics? How long? 2 cubics. And then how long is a 2 cubics and a half?
45 inches.
All right, no, wait a minute. Here's 1. It's 18. What's 2 times 18? 36. What?
36.
36. Okay. Now it says a half of what? What's half of
9?
Oh, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 40 what?
5.
45 inches.
Well,
what?
God uses the
method. All right, so what we're seeing here is we're looking at, I'm trying to show and tell what really kind of fascinating to look at it and kind of have a picture of exactly how big this thing really was. 45 inches. Now let me look. Oh, it's shorter than this table. Oh my, wow. Let's see, what's, and the other one width is what now? It's cubic and a half. What's cubic and a half? Let's see, that's 18 inches. Oh, I'm sorry, what? It's what? So, oh, thank you. I just want to make sure I get it right. Oh, that's short. Wait a minute, let's look at this one. Oh, it's even smaller than that. Kind of small, isn't it? How high is it? Oh, it's also 27 inches high. That's how high it is off the ground. Kind of small, isn't it? The ark's kind of small, isn't it? But what was in the ark?
Testimony.
We will get to that word, the very, very fascinating word that we need to understand something about this. Now, the reason why I'm going through this thing, I have to kind of picture what was being made and why it was being made. And so we have an idea of, this is just not a, oh, let's read it, hurry up, get over with it. But kind of picture it. Let's kind of visualize it the best we can to understand what it is that God wants to show us. What is the ark all about? Why was it there for? What was it representing? What was it doing? What was the purpose thereof? Okay? All right. Now, there's something else very interesting. And, of course, we talk about the rings and the rods, and they will not be moved. And verse 16, it says, thou shalt put in the ark, what? What is a testimony? What is he? You got it. What is Hebrew for? What is it?
Well, the word is aron, aron, and it merely means a witness.
A witness. That's a witness. You know, the written word of God, the written tablets, is a witness of what? Written against you. We're on this particular location, and beneath that stone is a witness against you. It's covered with what? Covered with another covering. And that other covering is covered with something. What's the name of that covering?
Mercy.
What?
Mercy.
Okay. That's not really what it says in Hebrew, but yes, it's called the mercy seat, but that's not really what it came through. What does that word cover mean? What?
Kapora.
What?
Kapora.
Which comes from?
Kippurim.
Right. The covering. Covering of what? So now we have the throne of the golden seat that's sitting upon the covering of the transgressions that are against us. Ah, and we know what happened to that stone. There was certain blood that had to be poured upon that thing every year. It was the goat and with the bull. They've atoned with the goat and the bull, right?
The priest
had to have his own.
That was a bull.
A bull. Okay, thank you. So now we have a better understanding of what the ark is all about. It's just not, that's where things are kept. No, there's something on top of that ark. On top of that ark is a gorgeous, beautiful seat with two incredibly gorgeous angels, or cherubim. And they are looking, they're, quote, facing, not face to face, their bodies are looking, or at one another, but looking down upon the seat, or this, where it's opened up. What do you think the cherubim are trying, what is it that God is telling us, why he wants those two cherubims to one be on one side and one on the other side, and why does he want them to look down and look at who is on the throne? What is he trying to tell us? Wait, what is the seat about?
Mercy.
Right? Mercy.
Well, in a way, they're witnesses. They're witnesses of the blood. And everybody, we have, we think religion is so antiseptic and clean, but it never says anywhere that the blood was wiped off. So over hundreds, thousands of years, you can imagine just what state. It was a bloody mess.
Yeah. And
you know what?
Up.
God is making a statement. I mean, underneath the blood, it would be beautiful, but actually the gold was covered in it.
It's been tarnished.
Yeah. It's our sin, a picture of our sin, I think.
Now, see, it's kind of fascinating when you start looking now at this ark, right? Have a different point of viewpoint than, that's where the manna's at, and that's where the rod's at, and that's where the Ten Commandments are at, and that's where... What is it telling us? What is it trying to get us across? That we can see what God is saying. I want you to look at this. I want you to know. I'm describing it precisely in precise detail, what it should look like, and how the wings should be done, and what they should be doing, how they should look. And he gave one man the gift to do all this. And he was a son of what man? You forgot? Huh? All right. Moses was on a mountain someplace, right? Remember that time? Maybe you forgot history. You know, he was on a mountain and there was a war going on. You remember that? And he had to hold up the rod, and got tired. And then, of course, there's two guys helped him.
Hur.
Okay. Hur is the father of the man who built the golden ark. And God says, I will give him all of the talent. I'll give him all knowledge. I'll give him everything he needs to know. Wow. Why? You know why? Because his dad did something. What a blessing. What a blessing. The man didn't have the talent until God gave him the talent. We always talk about, oh, you had a talent. Oh, God gave you a gift. The truth is, the answer, 90% of the time, is true. If a gift is to do evil, then no, he didn't give that to you. You just took it on yourself. But when it comes to something that God has created, what God wants to create, it's going to be something that's going to be really good looking. So we have that pure gold and pure feet. Okay, now, cherubim. What do you think that word means?
What are they?
What do you think it means? What's called a, what do they do? They're what? They guard. They guard. Now, how and what do they guard? Not only that, they also guarded what? The Garden of Eden, the two. What else do these pair of cherubims do? As we go into the story about the tent, there are cherubims all over the place. They are the guardians. They are not just, well, some kind of angelic being that's got some kind of, you know. No, he's got the power to protect, got the power to guard. He's got the power and authority, and his job, his function is to guard and to protect. That's his function. That's what a cherub is. Not the stupid little thingy with the arrow and shooting somebody's. Forget it. I'm not going to go there. The word cherubim is spoken of 60 times in the Bible. It's a lot, isn't it? Over 10 times the book of Exodus of and by itself. And over 15 times in the book of Ezekiel. So do you think cherubim has a issue or a meaning, a purpose in our lives? They're so important that God made sure that when they built that ark, they built two cherubim, or cherub, and then became cherubim. And he made sure that on all of the round about the tabernacle are cherubim. And in the temple, in book of Ezekiel, many of you already heard this from my son, what do you see all over the place? The cherubim. They're guarding. What are they guarding? What are they looking at? In book, you remember that. They're looking at and looking at the, what kind of tree? The what? No. Palm trees. A lot of palm trees in that temple in Ezekiel. And the cherubim are looking at the palm tree. They're going to guard it. They're going to protect it. What does a palm tree represent? Righteousness, uprightness. So they are there. You ever heard a phrase? What do they call it? The guardian angels? Kind of funny, isn't it? When you start looking back and start saying, oh, that's the interesting thing. Now, we talked about mercy seat, and it really means, comes from the word, to have a covering. But what does the word testimony mean again? Okay.
Question. You know, oftentimes we're told that the cherubim are angels, but I don't think it specifically says they are anywhere. Are they another?
They're just a spirit being.
Group. It's totally different from angels.
Angel is nothing but a messenger,
yeah. Okay,
technically speaking.
Yeah.
These guys are like, we know that in the book of Revelations, you have the 24 elders. What do they look like?
Right.
Well, we don't know.
I think that's where Christendom got that angels have wings, because we never see an angel with wings. We only see cherubim.
Very few have wings, it would appear.
Only the cherubim.
Only around the throne.
Right.
All right. I mean, the one that Ezekiel saw.
Yeah.
Right. And around the throne itself. Yes.
Revelation really makes it specific. All the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures.
Yeah.
So they're different entities. They're the only winged angels, or the cherubim, or the seraphim.
Angels don't need to have wings.
They don't.
But God just created some with it. Because why? Maybe he wanted to? Or maybe he's telling us something. Have you ever heard the phrase, "I want you to fly like an eagle"? Oh. Now, these particular ones have wings. What are they supposed to do? Fly? Yes. Where are they flying at? All around God. The throne of God. And he says, "I want you to fly like an eagle." What do these cherubim actually see? What do? They see God. They see the glory of God. I imagine they could talk. No reason why they can't. God didn't let them talk too very often. But just an idea to think about what's going on. There are certain angels who have wings, and why, for what reason? They must be a different high quote angel, messenger. They still a messenger, but has a different story, telling us different things, telling us something different. Because we know during Elijah's day, there was, quote, we'll call them angels, right? Okay. They had these army that was there with chariots. Oh, wow. They got to go to war. Oh. We always think, I told you this before about angel, right? Don't call your little daughter angel. She's supposed to carry out the will of God. Watch out. She just may. That's a joke. Tug-a-cheek. All right. Now, I'll speak to you. He says, and they're talking about the testimony where he says, "I'm going to go there." Not at the testimony, at that place where the witness is going to be placed. Which is placed in this box called an ark. And on the box is this covering called kupurim. A covering. Sitting over something. Now, another fascinating thing I want to go to. He's talking about the two cherubims and how they look, what they should do. They shall make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long, which is 3 feet by 18 inches by 27 inches high. So it's not very big. All right. But I want to go down to, we talked about the showbread. What do you think showbread is all about? It's kind of a funny word, showbread. It means face of the bread. Literally, in Hebrew, face of the bread. Yes.
I think it's referring to Yeshua. I think it's referring to Yeshua.
Why 12?
Huh?
Why 12?
I don't know. Oh, well, I didn't hear that part. Okay.
Okay, I said something last week, which I don't know really got through, and I want to repeat myself again. Now, you may say you disagree with me. That's okay. But you remember the woman, and she's on what? The moon, and around about her is what? The sun, and around her is what? The 12 stars. What is the story telling you? The moon, the sun, and the stars. What does that tell you? Mo'adim. The appointed time, which happened on the fourth day. Remember that? And everywhere you find anything in biblical terminology, when they refer to the Mo'adim, they're talking about the appointed times. Plurality. Pointed times. Plurality. Israel is in the center of all everything that has to do with the Moedim. All the nations on the face of this earth, in Genesis, so says, are divided based upon whom? The sons of Jacob. Not based. The reason why a land is where it's divided, where it's land is, not because, oh, somebody took it and overwhelmed it and they powered. No. It is divided because God has divided this world, the whole face of the earth, based upon the house of Israel, the appointed times. Everything in Israel's life, look at its history, look where it's at today, look where we are at today, look at everything to do with the appointed times. Everything is centered around the house of Israel, the house of Judah. Even the new covenant is based upon them. You know what it says. I will write a new heart, a new spirit. I will write into their hearts and into their minds. Into whom? The house of Israel and the house of Judah. If you're grafted on, blessed be you. But it's not centered around you. It's centered around the Moedim. And the Israel is it. It's the center of everything. From the very beginning. You think in the very beginning God didn't tell us that? But He did. Where's my water? I'm not counting them. You count them. Okay, I want to go to the golden menorah. You shall make a golden menorah. And it shall be made into one solid piece. And you'll have three on one side and three on the other. And there's these little knobs. And out of those knobs comes flowers. What kind of flower? That's almond blossom. Now, when I think of a knob, I think, oh, what's a knob? What's a knob? And then you start thinking about, have you ever seen a blossom from an apple tree or an almond tree? There's little buds in there. And then the flower comes out of it. The knob's still there. It's holding the flower. That's what a knob is. All it does is holding the flower. And I'm going to go down to verse 37 here. Very fascinating thing. I'm going through this thing as quick as I can. But I think you're catching on what I'm saying, right? And he says, now thou shalt make seven. It says lamps for it. And they shall set arrange its lamps so that they give light to the front of it. That interesting word, lamp. The word is not the lamp like we think of a lamp. It's more like a light, but not the order light. It is a device that holds the aura. And you must place this so that it will hold the aura. And in Hebrew, it means that it glistens. It reflects back. It magnifies the light. What are the lights? Eyes? What are the lights for? The eyes of God. That God will see everything. And it is magnified by, quote, the little lamp. Actually, it's the ora, reina, reira. It's magnified by the reira, which is connected to the word, not the word ora, but the one that glistens, one that brings or magnifies or enlightens the light, if I can use those phrases, increases it. That's kind of fascinating, isn't it? So it's just not a story. It's like saying, what is it all about? And the lamp is to be on one side, and the bread, show bread, is to be on the other side. Now let's go to chapter 26, if I can. Oh.
Since I've been lighting a menorah for about 40 years now, I am amazed that the flames look like an eye. The little black wick is the iris. There's blue around it, and then it extends up to the rest of the eye. And if you look at them, they look like eyes. Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, chapter 26. Oh, go ahead. Over there.
Where did that understanding come from, that the wicks or the lights are eyes? Is that in the Bible somewhere?
Zechariah.
Oh.
Yeah. Zechariah.
The seven eyes.
They are the eyes of God.
Okay. I know about the seven spirits of God. I just didn't know that it said eyes.
That's what this is all about. We are not the light. We are the one that's supposed to magnify it. Yes.
Well, I have a question because it specifically says it's to show light in front of it. And I'm wondering...
Well, not behind it. It's going to be... I mean, the light's going to be where they're reflecting toward the people, not away from. It's not going to be turning its back. You
know. But a candle shines light in
front of it.
No,
not this
degree.
One. It actually had the disc behind it. Daniel can clarify it's a disc behind that light.
Okay.
And that's what bounces
that's
the light forward.
That's what
right.
my question was.
Okay. It's that... I can't remember what word he used, but...
Okay.
But you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's that flower that's been shaped different on the top than on the bottom. It's a full flower. The other ones that are lower and down the knobs are not fully grown yet.
Yeah.
Or not a full blossom. But the one on the top, full blossom. And the way that the almond plant is a leaf, a flower, apparently...
So it's like a...
It has a tendency... Yeah. I just want to express this word, that lamp, and this word really has to do with the word glistens. Not all of a sudden it means a different meaning. It doesn't up by itself, it just glistens, it magnifies, it increases the light that's going to come from it, or from the menorah, which that's what the word menorah means, right? Light from. So, chapter 26. We have these 10 curtains. They're flown in blue, purple, and scarlet thread. And there's artistic cherubim you shall weave in them. Now, this is my thinking. That's it. I believe these cherubims is the colorfulness of the entire thing. I think the cherubims would have been weaved in and weaved out with these colors that they would stand out and be very noticeable. Upon linen. Alright? The object of why you would make the cherubim is so you would see them and see what they are doing. Not that it's just a gorgeous garment. This is my thinking. You don't have to accept it. I'm just thinking, I think I'm very fascinated. Because I try to see I've got this big, huge, you know, basically it's 52 yards. No, it's 14 yards. Well, that's a lot of material. Put it in American, and for guys, it's 40 feet long. A long, 42 feet is a lot of feet, by the way. And anyway, on these things was to have the cherubim.
Can I read 3 verses if I promise not to say anything more?
I'm sorry, what?
Can I read 3 verses if I promise not to say anything more? We have such a distorted view of what the cherubim are.
Yeah.
Like you said, the little guy with the bow and arrow, or the guys that do that sanctuary thing they take all around, the tabernacle thing.
Right.
They got the angelic beings. Look at 3 verses from Ezekiel. As for their appearance, the four of them looked alike. Each was a wheel. Each was like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the cherubim faced. The wheels did not turn about as the cherubim went. The cherubim went in whatever direction the head faced without turning as they went. Their entire bodies, including their backs, their hands, their wings, were completely full of eyes, as were their four wheels. I heard the wheels being called the whirling wheels. Chapter 10, as well as chapter 1, goes into so much detail, and Ezekiel was scared to death at the sight.
I would agree. I agree.
Kadosh.
Those two, the book of Exodus and Ezekiel talk more about the cherubim than anything else, other than Revelation. Does talk, but use that word, but they do tell you what's going on in the picture form. I do understand that. I'm going about the curtain right here, right now. And there were the curtain was set to two different sets of curtains. And each set of the curtain was 70 yards long or 210 feet in length. So that's a pretty long curtain, isn't it? How long is this building? And it's quite interesting to realize how big this thing was. Now, what was God doing? What was He showing? He says, both sets will have loops to tie them together, and they'd be able to hook together. And the first set was tied together with 50 hooks, and the second set was tied, had 50 hooks on them. And there was a clasp that connected into the hooks. All right. So get a picture of this curtain, or how big this thing is. He says, now, verse 8, the length of each of the curtains shall be 30 cubits and wide, and the curtain was 40 cubits and 11 cubits. Almost a lot of words, right? Now, basically means it's going to be 45 feet by 6 feet, 6 feet high. And, or what we call, women would say, 15 yards and 2 yards, for if you look at material-wise. And about the covering. Now, the fascinating thing about this goat's hair. Remember the one made out of goat hair, and he read it? It overlapped on the back and on the sides. It's made out of goat hair. What is unique, Ellie? Can you remember telling them what was unique about that particular material? Not material, the hair, weavy.
It absorbs water and becomes waterproof.
Absorbs water because it's waterproof.
When it rains, it closes up. And after that,
it becomes tight. When it's really hot, it opens up and lets the heat escape.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. They had one there at the place in the desert. And it was quite fascinating to know that's what goat hair will do. It does. You know, like when you make hats, Ellie makes hats, you know, and had. But how do you make it tighter and tighter and tighter? You heat it up. And they expand, they cool off, they contract, and they get real tight. Then you heat it up again, and they contract. They get tighter and tighter and tighter. So a hat begins about, 6 feet tall? Well, 6 feet tall, very wide. By the time your cowboy got it, it's down there, just over his head. That's how tight the fur keeps getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and becomes, in a sense, waterproof. I have a cowboy hat that caught in a drench of downpour, I mean, just soaked like crazy. My head did not get wet. The hat was just drenched. Inside the hat was dry. It didn't absorb, it just poured right off. Yeah, increased in weight, yes. So anyway, it's kind of fascinating when you think about how this is done and how God created this thing and the gorgeousness of this tent. Now, after we read this tent, what is it that you are supposed to see when it was completed?
Yeshua.
Listen, I'll ask you a question. Suppose you live in a neighborhood. Okay, typical neighborhood. And some new guy comes in. And he builds a mansion so outrageously great, in fact, costly, more expensive, and you, what happens to your house? It's awful! You think that the Israelites had wonderful tents? Oh, not compared to that one. So God's standard is extremely high. His quality is unmatched. You cannot reach the dwelling place and come close to where he is at. Now you say, well, but he wanted to sit down and dwell. Yeah, but you know what he had to do? He had to build a tabernacle called the Holy of Holies and to build a tent around it to protect his territory. I don't say he did that to protect his territory, but let you know. And nobody made material. Nobody made their house like that. Nobody made their tent like that. Nobody did that fine weaving. Nobody did it for themselves. They did it because that's what God wanted. And by the way,
The people did it willingly. That's what it said in the very first 25th chapter, right? Let them give it to them from their heart. Wow. Kind of gives you a picture of a little bit of what the people were like at that point in time in history. Any comments? Any thoughts? Did you find this kind of interesting when you look at the menorah, looking at the ark? I think that's one of the most important parts of the whole thing. In fact, the ark is the very first thing he talks about. Primary number one thing is the ark. And what goes in that ark is the witness. You said you were going to say what? You said, I heard you. You said you were going to say
I think this thing, too, when you look at it, I've heard this before. It's not original thinking, but it was pretty ugly on the outside. As you peel, these layers away, and there's the Shekinah glory on the inside.
Oh, I see. You're talking about,
there's some parallels there.
I was talking a little bit with Ellie this week about the menorah. We had some friends, a friend over last night who is really new to the whole Shabbat, and all we have is our menorah. We don't have the two sticks that we used to use. But I was wondering what the history behind why on Shabbat Jewish people only use two.
My wife may be able to answer that question better than me. Can you answer that question? Why there are two on Shabbat? She says she thinks so.
I think it's because we have two witnesses of light. Being a light keeper, this last year or so, there have to be two. I tried doing one light for like 3 months. It blew out. I made trips back and forth home to get it. The first time I did two lights, and I thought, oh my goodness, it stayed lit. And after that, I didn't have a problem with it. We have two lights. We have Moses and Aaron's playing the part of Messiah. So you can come to God, Song of Moses, Song of the Messiah, or Song of the Lamb. You can come to God either way. So we have two lights. The menorah was the temple light, as we spoke. By the way, the eyes of God are Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10. And even in Jewish homes, we were in Yona's house, our Hebrew teacher, and she said, I have a menorah. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. It's a temple menorah. I can't light it. Because she goes to the synagogue, and they have one in the synagogue, but you weren't supposed to light it in your house. It was like, why would you light it in your house? Well, we do it on the new moon, but they did the two lights. If I didn't have seven children, I fell in love with the menorah the first time I saw it many, many years ago. But I would have lit two. And most of my kids light two. But two witnesses.
But I think it's important to note the lighting of the candles did not come into custom until the Middle Ages. And there is nowhere in Scripture that says on Erev Shabbat, you light two candles, which is why we say, we don't say, you've commanded us. And actually, in medieval times, the Jews had a problem with that statement, because you cannot back from Scripture where God says you're commanded to light the Sabbath lights. It probably grew from the ancient custom of just keeping a light pre-lit before Sabbath, so that you weren't in a dark house after the sun went down.
I'm working on a paper right now about kindling light, but the fact that, and like Susan said, it had to come about so you wouldn't have darkness in your house, plus so you would have a light to light heat, a light to do anything that you had to do, because you couldn't light a Sabbath, and couldn't light a fire on the Sabbath, so you had to have a light. But also, he doesn't command us to light the lights on Friday night. However, the offering of the wine, the bread, and the light, or the oil, is an offering in Leviticus. It also talks about it in Psalms, I think about three different places. Oh, then you've also got the bread and the wine at Joseph. You've got bread and wine, various places, bread, wine, and oil. And those three things are an offering. So to do it on Friday night, to do your offering on Friday night, and does he command us to do that offering? Yeah. He doesn't say when. He says, do this offering. So, and sometimes we use oil for the lights. We usually use candles, but we can use oil. So in that regard, it can be done. So I think that's what they're thinking.
It's just another way of looking at things.